20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Full disclosure, I am recording this episode a little bit early. My son's got a soccer tournament in Illinois this weekend. Also, as mentioned, getting the backdrop done. This is one of the last episodes with Bart Starr behind me, which is a little bit bittersweet, but getting that done. So trying to get some episodes done in advance because of that. But I digress. Today, what I'm going to be doing is going over the best and worst of the Packers offseason so far. I'm recording this very, very early on Thursday, March 19th in the morning, 2:07 a.m. Central Time to be exact. So if there's anything that happens during the day on Thursday or Friday, my apologies that it is not on this list. Hopefully it is more best of and not worst of. I've got ones on each side, so we're going to be going over back and forth of some of the things that went really well so far for Green Bay and some things that went not so well for Green Bay. So let's jump into it right away. The best and worst of the Packers offseason so far. We're going to start off with the best. The best is somehow, some way, for the love of all things Jerry Jones, getting a fourth round pick in return for Rashawn Gary. Not just getting a fourth round pick in return for Rashawn Gary, but getting a fourth round pick in return for Rashawn Gary after an abysmal end of last season for Rashawn. Getting a fourth round pick for Rashawn Gary after he was hacked into tweeting and Instagramming a story of him saying goodbye to the Packers that it's been agreed to that he's either going to be traded or released. After all indications were that Green Bay was probably not going to get anything, or if they did, it was probably going to be a seventh, maybe a sixth round pick in return. Green Bay got a fourth round pick. Yes, it's in 2027. I don't care if it's in 2076, which of course you can't do. The Browns might try to change that. But the fact that they got a fourth round pick for Rashawn Gary brings joy to me, a smile end to, you know, from end to end. It is a beautiful, beautiful trade. For Green Bay. It's just one of those things where you were expecting nothing and you got something. It's not a game-changing pick for Green Bay. It's a fourth-round pick in 2027. It's fine. It's good. They've had a lot of success with fourth-round picks in the Brian Gutekunst era, so it certainly could be something of value. But just at the end of the day, when you're thinking, ah, they're probably going to have to cut them, maybe they get a seventh-round pick, and then you get a fourth, that was a very exciting day. Thank you, Jerry Jones, once again. We appreciate you a ton. And all future deals, the first phone call will be to you before any other moves are made. You have earned that right to give us some crazy offer for the next thing that we want to get rid of. So thank you very much, Jerry Jones, for that. Worst, I'm not going to beleaguer this. You guys know how I feel already. I didn't like the Zaire Franklin trade. There's just a couple different reasons I didn't love it. The first is that he's coming off a very bad year. I wholeheartedly agree with Justice Mosqueda and others that he is going to be a much better fit in Jonathan Gannon's defense, at least what we think Jonathan Gannon's defense is going to be than what he was in Indianapolis. I would be stunned if he didn't play better than he did in Indy a year ago. I still struggle giving up, it's sort of in a similar vein to Dallas. I think a lot of Indianapolis Colts fans were thinking that they were probably going to have to cut Zaire Franklin. Like that was a real possibility. And so Green Bay giving up Colby Wooden, it's not like Colby Wooden's a deal breaker for anything, all right? I liked how he played last year. Your defensive line is incredibly thin, especially with run pluggers. And Wooden, although not playing great at it, was your best run plugger a season ago. I think that was an odd choice to trade Colby Wooden. He also was on a super cheap deal where Zaire Franklin was not. So you're trading a younger player at a more premium position who's actually coming off a better year than Zaire Franklin. And at a position that you really need, you know, desperately need, who actually makes less money, there's a lot of advantages there to Colby Wooden than there are to Zaire Franklin. Of course, the hope and the goal is that Franklin will well outperform Colby Wooden this year in this new defense. But I didn't like giving up Colby Wooden. I thought he could still be a valuable piece for Green Bay in this upcoming year. The second thing is I don't love trading for a player that's above 30 coming off by far and away the worst season of his career. That struggle with both tackling and coverage. So maybe if you have one or the other, if you were amazing in run defense and tackling, but you sucked in coverage, or if you were amazing in coverage, but you sucked in run defending and tackling. All right, we can platoon that player at least, but struggling with tackling and struggling in coverage, that's a little bit iffy. That's a little bit harder pill to swallow. And then the other thing too, actually two other things. A, that they had to give him a raise, at least with Rashawn Gary for Dallas. They traded for him and then they somehow got Rashawn Gary to take a pay cut, which never happens because usually the player has all the leverage in that scenario. But the fact that Green Bay had to then give Zaire Franklin a raise and some guaranteed money on top of it, that seemed very odd to me that they had to actually pay him more. And then the other thing is that the linebacker market ended up being far more depressed than what we expected it to be. In fact, Devin Lloyd, by far and away the best linebacker on the market, an all-pro a season ago, got 3 years at $14 million a year. 3 years, $52 million. Sorry, 3 years, $42 million. That's a bargain for Devin Lloyd. In fact, Devin Lloyd this year, just this year, but this year will make less against the cap than what Zaire Franklin will. And it's, you know, Lloyd definitely makes more next year and then has a third year on it where Franklin only has 2 years. And you would have lost the comp pick if you signed Devin Lloyd. I'm not saying that it's an exact, you know, apples to apples or whatever, but you get a major upgrade at linebacker in Devin Lloyd, who pairs very, very well with Adrian Cooper for not a ton more in cost. And instead you trade away Colby Wooden to bring in Zaire Franklin, who again, you have to give a raise to coming off the worst year of his career. You give up a young player. I just didn't like it in totality. If like Zaire Franklin would have been cut by Indy and you would have brought him in on a 1 year, you know, $4 or $5 million deal. Sure. Great. Again, clearly that wasn't going to happen. There must've been other interests out there in Zaire Franklin that was not what was going to be an opportunity for Green Bay. It just felt like they overvalued him a little bit. I think they just gave up a little bit too much. All right. Best news. I didn't know what Brian Gutekunst's answer was going to be when I asked him in his, you know, press conference immediately, not immediately, but following the season and to start the off season of what the, you know, prognosis was for Zach Tom being ready for the start of the regular season. That is a partially torn patella tendon. That specific injury, a torn patella tendon, has been catastrophic for offensive linemen. It has been brutal. Like if you would say right now, if an offensive lineman could either tear their ACL, pop their Achilles, or completely tear their patella tendon, I think completely tearing their patella tendon might be the worst of the three. Like offensive linemen have had really, really difficult times coming back from that. Now the report, thankfully, was a partially torn patella tendon for Zach Tom. But even in that, you know, realm, it's scary. And you didn't know. And thankfully, Brian Gutekunst answered that he should be good to go. And their expectation is that he's going to be ready for the regular season and his injury should not affect him going into 2026. He's going to miss time. He's going to miss a lot of the offseason, but that he should be ready for 2026 is massive news. They can ill afford to lose Zach Tom at all. And they need him to be Zach Tom. And if that can be the case, if they can get him for week one, good to go, and he's himself, that is a huge win. And again, one of the best pieces of news, because he could have said, yeah, we expect to be without Zach Tom for the first half of the season or something. And that just changes everything. It changes everything. So his injury, you know, diagnosis and prognosis, the fact that he's going to be ready for week one, at least per Brian Gutekunst, is a huge, huge win this offseason so far. Worst is, at least as of recording this, lack of interior defensive line and nose tackle depth. The expectation is 3-4. The expectation is that you need a nose tackle. You went into the offseason with your defensive line. You lost Devontae Wyatt. You brought in Javon Hargrave. You are 1-for-1 so far. You have not added, you know, more depth or more players. You've added a better player in Hargrave than what I think Colby Wooden was. And again, I like Wooden, but I think you added a better player in Hargrave. I don't think there's much argument against that. But you still don't have any legitimate nose tackle, and you still need more defensive line depth. Right now, you know, you what you probably want is, if you're going to run a 3-4, two nose tackles and then, you know, 4-3-4 defensive ends. All right. Devontae Wyatt, Javon Hargrave, Warren Brinson, Carl Brooks. Those can probably be your four defensive ends, like your 4-3-4 defensive ends. I don't have much issue with that. LVN might be able to kick inside a little bit now and again. that's fine. But you don't have those two notes. And I don't even want Stackhouse or Jonathan Ford being the second guy on that, to be honest. I would like two more players, like a DJ Reader and then a draft pick, like a third or, you know, second, third, fourth round pick. That's when I would start feeling comfortable. And so as of today, they just don't have that depth there. And that is concerning. And so far, one of the worst aspects of this offseason. The best, Chicago Bears center Drew Dolman retires. Now, I want to be very clear. I want players to play. I want the best of the best to play. I wish everyone was healthy. I wish everyone was wanting to go out and compete. That was a phenomenal signing by Chicago. And again, you want everyone to be at their best. I also don't know the entire situation with Drew Dolman. It sounds like he just was ready to be done. But if it was anything family related, health related, injury related, whatever, I'm not wishing Drew Dolman to be done playing. I'm not wishing, you know, anything in that realm. Okay. Just to be totally clear. And if I had my ultimate, you know, desire, all injuries would be turned off and everyone would be at full strength. But make no mistake about it, Drew Dolman being gone for Chicago is a huge win for Green Bay. His changeover to now Garrett Bradbury at center for the Bears, that is a big downgrade. And Drew Dolman was one of the keys to that offense. He was super, you know, influential and with, you know, with Caleb Williams and helping the calls at the line of scrimmage. And he was just really freaking good. And Garrett Bradbury is not that. Garrett Bradbury's been an interior offensive lineman that Green Bay defensive lineman, specifically Kenny Clark in the past, but have had their way with at times. I think you now have a real target on that Bears interior, their offensive line. Left tackle is still a little bit of a question mark as well, but you now have a target on the interior of that offensive line that you can get after a little bit more. And I think that is a huge win for Green Bay and a huge loss, no question about it, for Chicago. Worst part, the NFLPA grades. We talked about them the other day on the pessimistic side of things, but that was a brutal report card for the Packers. By far and away the worst that they've gotten since the NFLPA has put out those grades. Bad grade for Adam Stenovich, the strength and conditioning staff and training staffs, Matt LaFleur, just not what you would expect, not what you would hope for. And hopefully it's better next year. Well, you know, we'll probably get it leaked again next year, but you do not want to see Green Bay being in the bottom third of the league in report card grades. How much it means and what, maybe some, maybe nothing, but if given my choice, I'd much rather have the players feeling great about the organization. They clearly did not. And the fact that it took a significant step back over where Green Bay was the 3 years prior, that's not ideal. That's not great. That's not what you want it to be. Best, the Green Bay Packers. Your Green Bay Packers signed a real life, true, legitimate kick returner and punt returner in Sky Moore. And this isn't the exact same thing as Mecole Hardman. Hardman got a very minimal amount of guaranteed money. Sky Moore got $1 million guaranteed. Can you still move off of that and cut it? Yes, but usually Green Bay is not in the business of cutting players who got $1 million plus guaranteed. He got just a flat million, but you get my point. Sky Moore is very, very likely going to be one of the kick returners and your primary punt returner this upcoming season. I think he's going to be a good number six wide receiver as well. But that is huge. A huge position that they just completely ignored in 2025. They now have a real good, legitimate kick returner and punt returner. That's huge. Not only that, but they also emphasize bringing back Nick Neiman and Christian Welch. So I think that's positive as well. There was actual signs that they wanted to keep some of the special teams core together and went out and actually got one of their biggest missing pieces on special teams from a year ago at kick returner and punt returner by bringing in Sky Moore. The worst was Rich Bisaccia deciding that after every single other special teams coordinator position had been filled, and after your assistant special teams coordinator had been hired away for one of those special teams coordinator openings, you decided you were going to go coach elsewhere in the college ranks at Clemson and completely abandon Green Bay and leave them without a coordinator after all the best coordinators were off the market. That is a brutal move. I'll be kind and just say it's a brutal move. I could call it something else. You probably know what I'm thinking of. That is a slap in the face. I don't know the whole story. It seems like Green Bay was legitimately caught off guard by this. That's the you know, inside scoop that I've heard on it, is that Green Bay did not expect this to happen. As I talked about yesterday on the pessimistic side of things, if you're Green Bay, you need to give Rich Bisaccia a deadline date to decide so that you don't end up in a position where every other good special teams coordinator was already hired. Now, maybe Acord is the dude. Maybe he's awesome. Maybe he's what they've been looking for all along. Lord knows when they've been given opportunities to hire some of the best special teams coordinators, it hasn't worked out, or they've screwed it up, or they've just gone completely in a different direction anyway. So maybe when their back's against the wall and have to hire one, maybe they make their best decision yet. Who knows? But the fact that they had to do it after all the other special teams coordinators were picked over, and it was the very last coordinator hire at offense, defense, or special teams of the entire cycle, that sucks. That blows, and was one of the worst parts of the offseason. We'll be right back. Best part, Packers bring in Javon Hargrave. I'm going to be honest. I think I'd be freaking out a little bit right now if Javon Hargrave had signed elsewhere. Maybe Calais Campbell? Maybe you sign Calais Campbell at this point in time. That's going to cost you a comp pick, though. They were just out of options. DJ Reader's out there. It's a different player. But they needed Javon Hargrave. And they still need something more, too. We've talked about that. Probably a couple more players. But if Hargrave's gone, if he goes elsewhere at that point in time, I would have started getting very concerned about this Packers defensive line. I think Hargrave's going to be legitimately good. It's probably a little bit more. I would have liked around, you know, 8 or 9. I thought 8 million was probably going to be about right. Anything 8 to 10, I knew it was going to be, you know, probably in that range-ish. I think he went for what, like 11? It's a totally fine deal monetarily. I have no issue with it. It was probably just a hair above what I was maybe hoping for. But overall, this was a player that they needed at that point in time. And I do think he's going to bring not only a veteran presence, but he can be, I think, a better run stopper than he's been given credit for. And I think he can be better this year. But also, I think he's going to give them some real juice as an interior pass rusher as well. Worst is that they didn't really find a big-time impact player. We talked a little bit about Devin Lloyd. I think he would have been fun. Maybe Arik Woolen. Maybe he could have been that guy at corner for Green Bay. I don't think the Jalen Watson deal was completely so crazy that it was out of their range. I think there were deals that they could have found in this free agency that would have been totally fine for them to go after and get a little bit more of a premium upgrade on this team. They didn't. And maybe that's okay. Maybe Hargrave's going to be exactly what they needed on the defensive line. Maybe Benjamin St. Juice is going to break out in a legitimate way at corner. Sky Moore gives them a great kick returner and punt returner. Dyer Franklin in the trade, maybe he comes in and plays really well at linebacker. But it did feel like there were maybe some opportunities out there to get a more impact player, and I'm not quite sure they got that. So that's been maybe a little bit of a disappointing aspect. Maybe not one of the worst things, but definitely more on the disappointing side. Best, hiring Bobby Babich. I thought that was a really strong hire. We don't know the whole story as to why they let Derek Ansley and Ryan Downard out of the building. Green Bay did not have to let them do that. As far as I'm aware, they were not quote unquote coaching free agents. They were still under contract. And so in order for Ansley and Downard to walk, I think Ansley go to Dallas, I want to say. And I know Downard went to Miami, but regardless of where they went, I believe Matt could have blocked all of that and just said, no, we want you to stay. I don't know the story as to why they are gone, but regardless of what that story is, replacing it, you know, both losses with Bobby Babich, I think is a really good bit of business for the Packers. Babich is a really good defensive coach in Buffalo, had the defensive coordinator role, and I think he's going to come in. He's got linebacker experience. He's got secondary experience. He's got coordinator experience. I think he's going to be a very, very strong fit in that secondary, and they need it. The corners need an upgrade. They did not play well a season ago, and maybe bringing, you know, Bobby Babich in to coach that group can get them headed and trending in the right direction. Worst, as far as we know, Luke Butkus is still the offensive line coach, and I'm perplexed by that decision. Not what I would have done. Said it a billion times before, and I'll say it a billion times again. Really hard to know for sure. Maybe Luke Butkus is one of the 10 best offensive line coaches in the NFL, and we just don't know it. It's hard to understand exactly what goes in every day and what he is doing. But every offensive lineman seemed like they were underperforming a season ago, and the unit as a whole seemed like they were completely underperforming a season ago. Rashid arguably had his worst year of his career. Elton arguably had the worst year of his career, despite both basically being in contract years. Rashid was, Elton basically was. Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton did not show huge signs of progress. Sean Ryan, before moving to center, I thought was having a much worse year at right guard than he did the year prior. Zach Tom was beat up, so tough to gauge anything there. Aaron Banks did not come in based on that contract and play the way that you were hoping he would play. Felt like the entire group underachieved, and usually that's going to go against the position coach. In this case, it didn't. And for some reason, Luke Butkus remains, at least as far as we know, with the team as offensive line coach. Best, signing Benjamin St. Juste. I thought that was a really good deal. One of my top 10 to 15 free agent moves. I love the contract. I think it's good value. You basically get the $5 million look at him this year, and then you get a free $5 million option on him next year. If you want to pick it up, you can. If not, you release him, and you don't have to pay any of that $5 million. It's a really good deal for Green Bay. I love the opportunity to take a look at a talented player at a position of need, and there's really very minimal risk. Worst case scenario is $5 million. Probably gives you a little bit as a depth piece at corner in a worst case scenario and a special teams player. Best case is he goes on to be a starting corner, looks really good, and you get a huge value not only this year, but next year on another $5 million deal. So I really like that deal for Green Bay. The worst is not being more aggressive at corner. While I like the St. Juste deal, I still feel like they are players short at corner. I don't trust Nixon. I don't trust Valentine. I don't trust Bo Melton, who's never played a snap at defensive back yet in a regular season game. I like Kamal Haddon. I'm not ready to trust him as a starter. And while I like the St. Juste signing, I don't think you can just plug him in as a true number one corner. You might not even be able to plug him in as a true number two. So I have a lot of questions at corner, and I wish they maybe would have been a little bit more aggressive. I do think there were a couple free agent deals that were out there that would have made some sense, but Green Bay didn't do it. Hopefully they're right, I'm wrong, and that they were right to stick with the corners that they had. Guess time will tell. Best was re-signing Sean Ryan and picking back up Chris Brooks as well. I'm just glad that they understood the value of Chris Brooks as a third down back who can pick up blitzes. I think that is so valuable. They think they were right to prioritize him over Emmanuel Wilson. And then Sean Ryan, we talked about it. Connor McGovern gets signed right before the start of free agency. Biadasz gets signed right before the start of free agency. And you get down to the day before actual free agency, and it's Linderbaum, who ended up going for $27 million per year. Green Bay was never going to be in on that. I don't think anybody besides the Raiders was going to be in on that. That's just a crazy amount of money. So the Raiders get him. It was really down to you re-sign Sean Ryan, or you better make an aggressive play for Cade Mays, who the Lions went out and signed pretty aggressively. And because if you lose out on Ryan and Mays, now you're scraping bottom of the barrel at center and or have to try to figure out something in the draft, and the draft is not a deep center class. It would have been an issue. I think re-signing Sean Ryan was a very smart move, and I like getting Chris Brooks back as well. Worst, restructuring Aaron Banks. I do not understand this. They had other levers to pull in Micah Parsons and Jordan Love, amongst others. I do not understand why Aaron Banks was the one that they went with. It basically guarantees that he's going to be on the roster in 2027. For a player that did not live up to expectations, injury or not, in 2025, to just say, we're all in, committed on 2026 and 2027 with Aaron Banks, that is a odd choice. That is a very odd choice. So I would not have done that if I were Green Bay. I thought it was a poor decision. I think you would have been better off leaving yourself the availability to release him next year, the option to release him next year. Now it, again, pretty much guarantees that he's going to be on the roster next year, regardless of almost how he plays this year. Best, releasing of Nate Hobbs, almost the exact opposite. It was time. It didn't work out. I think he was going to be even a worse fit in Jonathan Gannon's defense. They had no slot availability because Javon Bullard's going to take that, that full-time job. It was right to move on. They admitted the mistake, a brutal signing in hindsight, paid almost $18 million for him last year for the 1 year on the deal, and now have dead cap hit to show for it and nothing else. But it was the right decision nonetheless. Green Bay moves on from Nate Hobbs. Worst, the Rashid Walker comp pick situation and overall comp picks. Rashid Walker, expecting to get $20 million per year, potentially a third round draft pick, gets $4 million on a 1 year deal and will actually be the one that cancels out. It would have been, I think, a seventh. That one will get canceled out by Benjamin St. Juste, and now it's Enagbare who actually gets a sixth round pick for Green Bay. Just a crazy turn of events. And overall, first of all, this year in 2026 for this draft, there was a hope that Green Bay was going to get another seventh round pick. They didn't. That sucks. And then the hope was that next year they were going to maybe get 2/3 and 2/4. And instead they get 1/3, 1/4, 1/5, and 1/6. That's quite a bit different. Instead of 1/3 and 1/4, they got 1/5 and 1/6, a pretty big downgrade for comp picks, and didn't get 7th this year. So bad comp pick news all the way around. Best, not losing any home games to an international game. They will actually truly have 9 home games at Lambeau Field this year. It's not the AFC's year to have the 9 games. They don't lose a home game internationally. They get the 9 home games. That is really, really fun. They might still play internationally. There are a couple road games that Green Bay still could play internationally, but it will not be one of their allotted home games. And then the worst, last but not least, the Minnesota Vikings getting Kyler Murray for free and not losing Brian Flores to a head coaching gig. There was that hope that Flores would leave and that would really undercut their defense because he's sort of the mastermind behind everything. There's the hope that maybe JJ McCarthy was going to get another chance, or maybe they're going to have to bring in a terrible quarterback. They get the best option out there on a super cheap 1-year vet minimum deal in Kyler Murray, not to mention JJ McCarthy, now not the starting quarterback. That stinks. And they fired their general manager who got them into this mess in the first place. We were all hoping he was going to stay for a while. They let him go as well. So some not great things for the Minnesota Vikings from a Packers point of view, some good things for the Minnesota Vikings, which we do not like to see. Just to recap it, best were Rashawn Gary, Zach Tom's injury update, Drew Dolman retiring, Sky Moore and his special teams returns for Green Bay, Javon Hargrave signing, Bobby Babich coming in as defensive backs coach, Benjamin St. Juste signing, re-signing Ryan and Brooks, releasing Nate Hobbs, and not losing a home game internationally. Worst with the Zaire Franklin trade, the lack of interior defensive line or nose tackles brought in so far, the NFLPA grades, Rich Bisaccia choosing to leave when he did, not finding a big-time player in free agency, Luke Butkus still the offensive line coach, not being more aggressive at corner, restructuring Aaron Banks, Rashid Walker comp pick and overall comp pick situation, and Kyler Murray to the Vikings, plus Brian Flores returns, plus they release their general manager. That is what I have for you today. Thank you, as always, for joining me. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. We appreciate that a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weiss, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch Zillertson, Large Charles, Jay Koner, Will Glass, and Imperium Collectibles. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.